I suppose I should first of all give a disclaimer. This is not a Linux talk. I will, of course, mention Linux towards the end in a rather more positive way than I thought I'd be able to do last week. This is also a paper which would probably go for about an hour and a quarter, so I've chopped out the interesting bits at the end. Now, Venum is a volume manager, which means that it gives you virtual disk drives. What the objects you see in the kernel look just like disk drives, but they're really made out of bits and pieces taken from wherever you want to take them. So that, in other words, that isolates the hardware from the device interface and maps the data in various ways. Depending on what you want, you can get more flexibility, more performance, more reliability. You can even do all of those. You've got the RAID, a number of RAID levels. The ones that people know about are RAID 0, 1, 4, and 5. Also things like RAID 10 and lots of other things that people have never even properly defined. Originally started this as a clone of the Veritas Volume Manager, but I didn't try to make it an exact clone. I tried to make it better. It runs on the FreeBSD. It's been doing that for at least 5 years now. Last year, various things happened. NetBSD Current now has a version of Venum in it. Not complete, but it's there. OpenBSD, they've done a port. And then they talked to Theo, and Theo said not an inventor here, so I think that's as far as it's going to go. And then the interesting thing is that people have started thinking of porting it to Linux. So we've got a number of RAID levels. RAID 0, we'll talk about all these in more detail, so I'll just mention them here. We've got RAID 0, RAID 1, RAID 4, RAID 5, and as I mentioned before, other ones as well. You can also combine them. That's the RAID 10 I mentioned. And the way the configuration works means that you can create things which don't correspond to any defined RAID level. One example, for example, you can take a RAID 1, which has really got a RAID 5 on one side and a RAID 0 on the other side. And an important thing is that you don't need to stop the machine, you don't even need to stop Venum to change the configuration. And one of the reasons I didn't want to make Venum quite the same as Veritas was that I've seen the amount of pain that people had gone through when configuring and particularly misconfiguring Veritas. And mainly it was their own fault. That doesn't help much if the system lets you make that kind of mistake. And we've seen GUIs there. GUIs are wonderful things. You can create all sorts of things. You don't know what you're doing, but you can create them anyway. And I thought that this is probably not the best choice. You've got to know what you're doing, and then you don't need a GUI. And so my intention was to supply an easy-to-use non-GUI interface. And it turns out you can perform pilot errors without a GUI as well. And most of the bugs I get reported, which are about so-called bugs, most of the problems I get reported, which are about two or three a week, are due to pilot error. Okay, we've got a bewildering hierarchy of objects, and it took me a long time to realize they were all necessary. Volume is simple. Just think of a volume as a disk. But you've got to put it together out of one or more plexes. And the intention of a plex is to replicate. If you take two plexes, you have effectively something mirrored. And then you make plexes out of subdisks. And subdisks are just pieces, chunks of drive space. This is great for when you discover you've got 50 megabytes left somewhere on a disk, and you can't do anything with it. You just pick it up with a few other bits and pieces and put it together in a larger volume. Okay, and you put subdisks onto drives. The drive is just another way of anonymizing a disk. Basically, it's a partition. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. You can put as many subdiscs on a drive as you want. Obviously, they've got to all fit, but that's the only constraint. And in addition, each drive contains configuration information, which enables you to restart Venom without... You can go and take a random collection of Venom disks, stick them in another machine, start it up, and they'll find themselves and come up in the condition they were when they went down before. Okay, the volumes are not restricted to any particular size. In practice, that means that other parts of the system restricted to about, I think it's about 4 or 8 terabytes. Some of those may be bugs. I'm sure we can get rid of that limitation as well. You can speed things up because with the more spindles principle, you can do concurrent accesses to different disks, different physical disks, even if they're part of the same volume. And disk failure does not mean volume failure. It does not mean that you can carry on running either. That depends on how you built your volumes. Now, there's an issue here with uneven load on multiple disks. So we've got three different ways to organize the Plex. Concatenated organization is you take chunks of disk and put them one after the other in the Plex. You've got striped, where you take bits of each sub-disk in turn and put them across, put them in the drive. That'll become more apparent in the diagram which is coming up. And then RAID 4 and RAID 5 is effectively a striped, which provides redundancy. Now, concatenated organization would look something like that. The numbers in the boxes here are disk block number, disk chunk number, whatever you like. So here we've got 4 different subdisks, each of a different length, and they have blocks numbered like that in them. Striped organization requires that each disk be the same length, and so now the blocks go from the first disk to the second, third, fourth, and then back again. And this enables the intention here is to give a more even distribution of load across the disk. This isn't quite as straightforward as it looks because UFS also tries to do the same thing, and occasionally they confuse each other. Now that's just the organization. We'll get to RAID 5 in a minute when we've seen other organizations. Mirroring, we mentioned, we have more than one Plex. And mirroring at the volume level, I'd say that's really at the Plex level. It depends. You do this by taking more than one Plex and putting it into a volume. That's what that's intended to tell you. We have up to 8 Plexes. I can't think of any good reason for having more than 4, but Veritas did 8, so I took another bit in the minor device number, and that was that. RAID 4 and RAID 5 offer... the trouble with RAID 1 is that you need twice as much disk space. RAID 4 and RAID 5 get by with less disk space. There are trade-offs for that, which we'll look at. Well, there we are, right away. Writes are much slower. Takes about 4 times as long to write to a RAID 5 plex as opposed to a RAID 1 plex. A RAID 1 volume, sorry. And the RAID 4 and RAID 5 are implemented one level further down, whether it's between plex and subdisk. And it's basically the same as striped, but we put parity blocks on one of the subdisks. And so you end up effectively losing one subdisk for parity. So if you've got 10 subdisks in a striped organization, you've got the same amount of storage from an 11 subdisk RAID 5 array. So you'd need 10% more space, whereas with RAID 1 you'd need double the amount of space. And this is what RAID 5 looks like. We've seen that it looks pretty much like the striped organization, except for the parity blocks. Now, we store the parity blocks on a different disk for every stripe because the parity blocks get accessed very heavily when writing. And this spreads the load again. RAID 4 is clever. It puts all its eggs in one basket. And when you're writing heavily to a RAID 4 text, you can watch the disk lights and see that you can tell the parity disk by, because that's the one with the lights all on, and the other ones are just flickering. And when you read from it, you can tell it too, because that's the one with the lights all off. Whereas on RAID 5, you can really see this when you're doing heavy writes to each of them. Okay, now, so why do we have RAID 4? Well, it's easier to implement. That's about the only thing I can think of. The code is much simpler to write, but if you have both of them, it turns out that that's the only difference. You check here whether it's a RAID 5, in which case you use this funny calculation to work out where your parity subdisk is. Otherwise, it's always the last one. So the entire... We didn't originally have RAID 4 in Venom. Somebody said, yes, it'll have such good effects on with the drive case, it's bound to be faster. And so I said, okay, it doesn't look like it's a very difficult thing to implement. So I put in that line and those two lines, and we had RAID 4. But as I mentioned, it's a bit late to say now that RAID 4 has performance issues when writing. But it doesn't have any advantages. Not if you have RAID 5 as well. So, forget it. Okay, now the question is, which should we be using? The concatenated plexus are easy to use. You can start with only one of them. You can use it for soaking up odd bits and pieces lying around your disks. You can extend the plex, which I haven't mentioned here. Ooh. Sorry. Shouldn't put a mouse. Striped plexes are there for reducing hotspots, but as I mentioned, they have length constraints and RAID 5 offer fault tolerance. And the fault tolerance for RAID 5 comes at the expense of somewhat higher storage cost and significantly slower write access. And I said forget RAID 5, but somehow this is snarking anyway. Here's an overview. You need at least one subdisk for concatenated, otherwise you don't have any data. You need at least two for Stripe, because otherwise it's concatenated. You need at least three for RAID 5, because although theoretically you could do it with two, it would be stupid. Pardon? Well, no, it would actually end up being, the second one would be a complement of the first. So you'd have the data in one, you have the complement of the data in the second. And you can't add subdisks to Striped or RAID 5 because it's far too difficult for me to understand. And they also need to be equal size because of the algorithm used. Okay, with other features, we've got a program called Venom, which you use for online configuration, for looking at things. It does all sorts of weird and wonderful things. There's even a command called reset config, which blows your configuration away completely. People keep using it, and I've got them to say, okay, if you use this, type in exactly as intended the words no future. And people are continually typing in no future and blowing their Venom configuration away and wanted to come back and get it back. The answer is you can, but I'm not going to tell you how. Venom is supposed to work automatically. If a drive dies, it will find out and it'll recover where possible, which means that if the underlying disk driver doesn't tell Venom that something's gone wrong, it just hangs, and Venom hangs to it. And as I mentioned earlier, we store state information on the for each object on the drives themselves. Every time the state changes, it's stored on the drive. And there are a number of states. Like you can say that a plex is down, sorry, a subdisk is down, or a plex is faulty, and this information is persistent. and this enables things to go down, come back up again. You can then restart, then recover from the failure. If you have hot pluggable disk, you can take and I'll put another one in and recover the information. I should mention that. And a new thing which wasn't there, which only recently made it to prime time, is that you can have the entire system running GNOME, including the Blue Boot file system, which turns out to be rather complicated business. And the online reader that I mentioned. I mentioned this configuration database several times. And when you create objects, they're automatically stored in this database, which means that if you want to create something new, you don't need to mention things which already exist. And here's a simple example. We have a drive here which we're calling A, because I couldn't think of a better name. And that device is a typical FreeBSD disk device, SCSI disk device mainly. On this drive A, first of all, we then create a volume called MyVol and give it a Plex with a concatenated organization and one sub-disk, 1 gigabyte long, on drive A. That's what I'm saying down here on this slide. The reason why the drive is called A and not DA0S4H is that you can now go and take the system down, remove DA0 and put it into DA5, in a different drive, and bring it back up again. And the VNOME will start and it will find the drive in the right place because it has its own drive label, which is independent of the device name. People do occasionally create drives which are called DA0 and DA1 and things like that. And then they change them around. It still works, but it's very, very confusing. And okay, we've got the volume there. There are a number of additional attributes to all these commands, of course, but the only one you really need for volume is name MyVol. Plex defines the Plex, and you've got to specify an organization that can be either concat or striped or RAID 4 or RAID 5. You get a default name there, in this case myvol.p0, Plex 0. You can give it a name if you want, but it's not a very good idea. And then the subdisk line does the same thing for that and gives you a name, gets the name myvol.p0.s0. If you then list the configuration, you get something like this, which gives the information of all and state up, gives you information about the size. A stands for available. This is all to squeeze the thing into a single line of 80 characters. So we still have 74% of the drive available for additional subdisks. And this is a graphical representation which Veritas thought out, which is, I haven't thought of anything better. I think it's pretty rough, but the idea here is you have a single subdisk in the volume, and in the Plex, that's one Plex, one subdisk in it, and one Plex in the volume. Okay, let's try a RAID 1, a mirrored volume. To do that, we need another drive. We don't need to mention volume A again, because it's drive A again, because we already know about it. So now we create a Plex and a subdisk on our drive A, another one on drive B. Then we get something like this. We now have drive B in there, drive A, and we have volume mirror, which has two plexes over here, and the two plexes are here, and the two subdisks of the two plexes are there. And is that right? This would be can't be. It's off. So now we have two subdisks and two plexes, each with one subdisk. But I don't know if anybody noticed, not everything was exactly good here. We had a faulty complex and an empty subdisk. Not necessarily what you'd expect to have happen. The problem is that when you create a mirror, you're starting with disks which had some data on them, who knows what. But the only thing you can say is it's almost certainly not going to be identical on both, and therefore the duplexes are inconsistent. So you can't claim that they're the same. So to recover from this, you copy the entire contents of one plex to the other, which can take, you know, a big drive, you know, it might take a few hours. So we can cheat. But you've got to say you're cheating by saying setup state. So in this case, we could have put the keyword setup state there. And this only works when you're creating a new volume. It will then set all the states to R. And if you're adding a plex later on, of course, this is not a good idea. Because then you're relying on the data being there. Okay, let's move on. The next possibility would be to have striped organization. And here, we're adding two more drives, C and D. And now we're having a plex with an organization striped. And the 496K is the stripe size. I'll get back to why it's 496K a bit later on. Here we're taking four subdisks of 256 meg each, and I'm trying to keep all of these examples to 1 gigabyte in size. When we do that, we now have our four drives, our three volumes. We still haven't done anything about the second plex of mirror. But Stripe P0 has four subdisks, and they're all up. And you'll see that these are almost the same size. The reason why Stripe is not 1024 megabytes is because that's not an integral number of stripes. So under these circumstances, the last partial stripe just gets chopped off and you're made slightly smaller. This is probably 123.99 megabytes or something like that. And that's the best I could do for representation of striping. The idea here is the lighter boxes are at the beginning of the address space, and the darker ones are at the end of the volume address space. Instead of that, of course, we could have taken an 8085 plex. In this case, we need yet another drive, that's E. And here we do an organization RAID 5 instead of stripe, and again it's 496K stripe size, and we create five subdisks, which still gives us the same amount of memory because one of them is used for parity. Now we're running out of space on the slide, so we're just looking at this one, what we've added there, and again we end up with 1023 megabytes. Now we're in state init, which means we first need to initialize the drive before we do anything, with it. And again, the subdisks are empty. They don't contain any useful data. And this looks pretty much the same, except the really jet black ones here are the parity box. Now we talked about init. The point is, before you can use the RAID 5 plex, you must create parity. That turns out to be quite simple. Just write zeros to everything. Because the parity we do an exclusive OR for parity. So if all the data is zero, then the parity is zero too. Okay, we can make even more complicated things here. Mirrored disks are always better than RAID 5. So we could do something like that. This is a striped mirrored volume, which we're calling RAID 10 because that's the normal term for it. And that looks like that. These are just various examples which would give you an idea of how things are going. Again, we forgot the setup state, so the second plex is faulty and all its disks are empty. Okay, we've seen the default names. You can give other names, and you can have a volume called root and a plex called user.p0, and it contains subdisks var.p0.s0 and so on. That will confuse the hell out of everybody. So we just add P and the plex number for the default plex name, and dot S and the subdisk number to the plex name. It also creates device nodes in the hierarchy dev venum. There are two which go in there by default, a dev venum control and control D, which are used by venum to talk, venum and the venum daemon, which I'm not going to mention here again, to talk to the driver. Then we have character devices for each volume. FreeBSD does not have block disk devices. NetBSD does. And FreeBSD, and they both use character devices. So here we would have, in the examples we've seen above, we have things like DevVenom MyVol, DevVenom Mirror, and so on. And then we also have even more subdirectories with DevVenom Plex and DevVenom Subdisk. SD, sorry. That is a bug in Slide, so it should be SD. But so we've got RAID 10.P1, for example, RAID 10.P0.S2, the DevVenom SD in this case. Okay, we had a few gotchas. I mean, we've seen that volumes are the same as disks, but some old BSD software looked at the last letter of the disk name to decide what partition it was. So we've seen, for example, that the device names had, there were things like DA0S1H and so on. The H is the partition letter. And that actually worked if your Venom volume name ended in the letters A to H. If it didn't, you'd have things like new FS coming up and saying can't determine partition. We fixed that since then, but it was rather funny at the time. Okay, we mentioned that the on-disk configuration. The on-disk configuration is more explicit. There are lots of defaults when we create a device, but the stuff on stored on-disk is complete. And of course, it contains information on object state. And it does not mention the drives, because the drives have got to find themselves. If they're not there, there's no point telling Venom when you started up where the drives were last time it went down, because somebody could have shuffled the disks. Here's an example here. I have two volumes, MyVol, which and the information state up, state and state down for big RAID. Then we have, here we have explicit naming for the plexes, again state, and also which volume it belongs to, which you can do when you create the thing, but normally you don't need to. And this carries on here, things like what drive it's on, what plex it belongs to, what station it's in, how long it is, where it is on the drive, you can say that when you create it as well, and where it fits into the plex. All these this information which doesn't normally get told to the, what you don't normally need to tell when you create any object. So when you start up, you read this configuration. The first thing Venom does is it reads it from each drive, gets the entire configuration for each of them, and then processes it from the newest to the oldest. The idea there is that if at some time something has changed which the new configuration no longer knows about, maybe because something's died, you can recover it from the older ones. So it's the first one, you take the entire thing. Now, after that, you only add stuff which hasn't already been defined. So you wouldn't expect, if it says plex user.p0 state up, and then a bit further back you find one where it was down. You don't take the thing down because of that. Okay, performance. The Venom overhead is really negligible. Even RAID 5 hardly uses any CPU time. I had I developed this stuff years ago on a 66 megahertz 486, and the parity calculations took about 5% of the CPU time. However, there are other issues which have a very strong impact, and there are some which theoretically could be improved on. There's some stuff in the paper which I haven't got time for to present about the trade-offs of why, of how the requests get built and why the inefficiencies don't seem to make any difference. But the volume design, as I said, influences performance. Strike size is a very interesting issue. Typical Stripe recommendations I've seen are between 8 and 32K, and this is far, far, far too small. Because the real issue here is you don't want to have more I/O requests than necessary. It's true that if you split up a transfer into four smaller transfers, that each data transfer only takes a quarter as long. So instead of 400 microseconds, it might be only 100 microseconds. On the other hand, your positioning, your latency, your positional latency is about 5 milliseconds per disk. And that's time which you can't use for doing something else. So it makes things about four times as slow. And spindle synchronization doesn't help it because the seek latency remains and you're still using the latency for all of them. One of the things here is that Venom doesn't transfer more than necessary. If you have, say, a 2 megabyte Stripe size and your system is set up to transfer all Stripes, then this is rather counterproductive to have big Stripes, but Venom doesn't do that. And so the suggestion here is choose a Stripe size in the order of 256 to 512 kilobytes, which is large enough compared to the maximum transfer size that it doesn't make any difference. And we've done some performances here which show the effect of the Stripe size. You can see it tends to peak in some cases. We haven't quite worked out why, around the 256 to 512. I didn't have time to fiddle with the colors here. From top to bottom, it's random read, sequential read, random write, sequential write. And if you ask me why the sequential figures are lower than the random figures, I don't know either. One thing is that this is done with a program called Raw I/O, which does true sequential, true sequential activity, which means that it's not doing just one sequential transfer at a time, it's doing a whole lot of them. And so I suspect that there's a possibility that this is confusing the drive case or something like that. In any case, I'm beginning to wonder how useful the sequential transfer is. And sequential transfer is almost never of any interest because people don't do single sequential transfers very often. If you look at a website or an FTP server or something like that, they're doing multiple concurrent transfers. And they're sequential for as long as they go, which is typically one or two IOs. I suppose porn sites have a slightly different mix of data transfer, but even there, I would imagine that the sequential model is pretty much an exception. And in this case, we use 8 concurrent processes, which is the default, which explains why the sequential throughput isn't as that much higher as you'd expect. You'll also note that the transfer rates aren't very good. This is not because of Venom, this is because of the disk drives I had. Modern disk drives are much faster, but they all have a RAID controller behind them, so it's rather difficult to use them for test. We'll see the raw disk performance in another graph further on. And it shows the disadvantage of the small Stripe size. There's another issue here that the file system also tries to spread the load by creating cylinder groups. And they tend to be at the power of 2 in length. So if the cylinder group is a multiple of the Stripe size, then you'll find all your inodes at the beginning of the same drive. So when you do some things like deletions, block deletions, you'll find it gets very slow. So the idea there is to skew them a bit by not having a power of 2. And the disk cache size is also an issue which I haven't investigated at all. But we've seen things like those that tailing off in the previous slide, which suggest it might be a problem. Okay, now when we do RAID 1 mirroring, there are two possibilities. If you have enough disks, you put all your subdisks, every one of them, on a different spindle. Here's an example. We have here a total of 8 drives, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. And that way, of course, is, your activity gets a whole lot better. Read accesses alternate between the two, so you're going to spread your reads over all 8 drives. Write, of course, you've got to write to both of them, so you need twice. You only get half the bandwidth. But since you've got double the bandwidth from the 8 drives, it doesn't make any difference. However, if you're a mere mortal, you may only have 4 drives, in which case you can still do this sort of thing. You'll note here with the first 4 sub-disks, this is, by the way, an example of the sizes I used before I understood the correlation between UFS and stripe size. So that was what I used to recommend. A, B, C, and D are on the first plex. Now here, if you put A, B, C, and D on a second plex, and one of the drives failed, then you'd lose the same, you get the same hole in both plexes, and your drive would go down, your volume would go down. If you do it like this, you'll get 2 holes in the plex, but they're in different places, so Venom can recover from that situation. Okay, and under this circumstances, of course, the fact that the read access is alternating across the two plexes doesn't make much difference, because it's still accessing one of the same 4 drives. So there's a little performance difference if we're adding the second plex. Write access, of course, means you've got to write to 2 of these 4 drives every time, so you'll decrease your throughput by about 50%. And this is what we see here. We see that the read throughput is pretty much unchanged from the last one, but the write access has gone down to about half what it was. By comparison, these are the same values for a single disk without Venom. So it is just about possible here, if you choose a small stripe size, to actually reduce the performance of Venom, but you have to try. Okay, the request size stuff is some of the latency in the transfer time. I'm going to have to move through this a bit faster. We mentioned this briefly, that the throughput is dependent on the two aspects. So the transfer size would be nice to increase the transfer size, but it's not much you can do about it. It makes a big difference. I mean, here we go up to as much as 16 megabytes a second with 100 kilobytes transfers. Problem is, nobody uses 100 kilobyte transfers, so most of the time we're down at we're down in this area here. And we try to, Venom aims to work for multiple concurrent stuff, not particularly optimized for single concurrent stuff. So things like DD, which people use, don't really tell you very much information. It's not, also not the sort of thing you normally use it for. Here's a graph showing the number of, the relationship between throughput and the number of processes accessing concurrently. This is not as strong as it might be, but it's still obvious that it works well with more processors. Request structure can also change things. We've got an interesting situation here. This is a transfer which covers that area on the disk. So you'd expect to be able to do one transfer there on that subdisk, one there, one there, one there, one there, and make 5 of them. In fact, each of these blocks is a separate transfer. This looks like a disadvantage. The problem is, of course, it's only a problem if you're using very small stripes. When you're using the stripes we're using here, this couldn't happen. And we see here again that the stripe size has an influence, but not a very strong an influence on the transfer, much as it was with striped plexus. The big difference here is, of course, that write performance, as advertised, is very poor. Okay, we've got this is where it fits into the system. This is probably a thing to look at on the paper if you're interested. Basically, we have the block device drivers and character device drivers, which access the hardware. This is from the 4.4 BSD book by McCusick and Cohen. And Venom has been stuck in here. This is more the modern BSD, which has changed in a couple of other areas as well. The shaded area here is the block device stuff, which only exists in NetBSD, not in FreeBSD. And that's pretty much what I said here. Okay, now we've had Venom's been in FreeBSD for over 5 years now. We had two independent efforts to port it to NetBSD in last year, and it's been added there, and I haven't had time to clean up the loose ends. So if you want to use it on the NetBSD, be prepared to help me tidy it up. It's been ported to OpenBSD, but it comes from Australia, and Australian governments aren't clever enough to be OpenBSD hackers. I've got that invite in somewhere. And I was going to say that there's not much going on with Linux, but that changed last week when a group of people got together on SourceForge, and they're now preparing to port it to Linux. So I just need to get them the sources in a form which would be not too painful to convert. So, all of you people out there, join in, go to venom.sourceforge.net, and help port it. You can get information about Venom from the website venomvm.org. The SourceForge project is either venom.sourceforge.net or this version. And these slides are also on venomvm.org at that location. I'll leave that up if anybody wants to write it down. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? Okay, well, we have, we'll start down there. Yeah. Yes, that's true. We have some movements in the FreeBSD project, which are sometimes referred to as the Danish axes, which are chop out anything which I don't use. And there have been issues with Geom. Geom has been sort of developed, and for the purposes of a couple of developers who use it for their purposes and haven't really thought beyond there. And we're still talking about that one. I don't think it's going to go away. Yes. Okay, the question here is whether the optimizations that things like UFS used with rotational latency and cylinder position sensing and that sort of thing, whether they help or not. No, they don't help, they're gone. It just does not work with modern disks. There's no way of knowing the mapping, the physical mapping of data onto a modern disk, and they tend to use track patients anyway, just behind it. The question was whether that LVM has problems of aliasing by seeing the same disk from two different perspectives, through two different mappings. Venom does not have that problem. That's one of the advantages of having drive names. You find the drive, say, oh, we've got A. If you find it again elsewhere, theoretically you could say, I can see this from two different places. In practice, you just forget the second one. Yeah. Okay, I don't know of any such issues with Venom. Okay. Another question? I think it's the last one, is it? Okay. Okay. That could be a problem. That's not a good idea. I think what happens is that it won't accept the second one. It's pretty much a variant of the previous question. The trouble is, if you have two volumes called A, and you put the wrong one in, and it finds that one first, and then it'll ignore the other one, and that could really confuse the issue. Yeah. Yes, there is actually provision in Venom, which I've never really sort of completed, to recognize what system it was created on. And this is rather sort of primitive disproof implementation, but hasn't been done yet.